You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Next Monday night, Vanessa Redgrave will read excerpts from Michelle Zackheim's novel Last Train to Paris at the Cherry Lane Theater on Commerce Street in Greenwich Village. And jazz master Jimmy Owens will be performing some of his musical compositions on the flugelhorn and trumpet. The one-night-only special performance is a fundraising event for the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater, and I'll be there, too, introducing the festivities. It promises to be an exciting evening, and I'm very happy it has brought Vanessa Redgrave, Michelle Zackheim, and Jimmy Owens back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Michelle, is this performance a dramatic adaptation of your novel?
Yes, it is.
Now, Vanessa, the novel is in first person. Was it easy to find that voice?
The reason, if I say easy, it would be seem surprising to anybody, but why I say easy is because Michelle invited me, which was a thrill for me, to come and read some sections of the book that she'd chosen last June in one of the terrific bookshops downtown. And I said, yes, of course I will.
You knew each other?
Yeah, for a long time, and she and Charlie, her husband, have been friends for even longer, much, much longer, with my brother, Corin, who died 5 years ago. So it's kind of a long relationship, and it's just got better and better and closer and closer. So when I was reading it, I was astonished to find a voice was coming through to me. And I knew that I was reading and the public were really liking it. So that's when it began to dawn on me that this could be something that could be developed. And it seems Michelle thought so too.
Absolutely.
But there's a big difference between the voice you have in a novel than the voice you would have if you're playing a character in a play that has been written with the idea that somebody's going to be performing these
lines. Of course, you're quite right. That's why a lot of readers prefer to read for themselves. But then there's also another layer of people who are attracted by a new way of receiving something like a book. There are academics who hate going to Shakespeare's performances. They prefer to read the plays. You read them with your own voice inside. Mm-hmm. But
we all perform every time we're reading off the page. We're all performing what we're reading.
Well, the strange thing is that I don't perform it. The voice comes through me, and it's a mix of Michelle's life and her imagination and facts, all interwoven.
And Jimmy, you are not accompanying this. What are you doing
as part of this performance? Well, I'm a part of a three-part endeavor. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The author, Vanessa, and myself, to make this creative work come to life.
And did you write the pieces you'll be performing after having read the book?
Yes. After reading the script. Mm-hmm. Okay. I haven't read the book yet. I plan to read the book.
Well, the story takes place mostly in the 1930s. You are a modern jazz man. Are you going to harken back to the swing era?
No, I am going to deal with trying my best to capture the essence of the words that Vanessa is bringing forth. And along with a very fine bassist, Kenny Davis.
Oh, he is fine, yes.
Interesting combination between trumpet, flugelhorn, and bass.
Rather than
a large ensemble
or piano.
A larger ensemble, yes.
Yeah, I guess Sonny Rollins started that idea of playing with a bass backup without a piano. But I wonder, Michelle, the character that Vanessa's playing is an elderly journalist who goes through an old trunk of papers that contain reminders of her past, especially her experiences in Paris and Berlin before World War II. Does that framework lend itself to a one-woman performance?
Oh, yes, because the main character is based around one character as the main voice, and that's Rosie. And Vanessa knows Rosie I don't know how she knows Rosie, but she knows Rosie.
When you hear her reading your lines, does it reveal things that you didn't even realize?
Oh, yes.
That you had written?
Well, she brought forth an emotion that I wanted Rosie to have, but I always worried that I wouldn't be able to write it. And so, but Mendesa, when she read it at Robinson McNally Bookstore, she read Rosie. She was Rosie. It was shocking.
How did this benefit for the Rattlestick Playwrights Theater occur? Did they approach you?
No, we offered it to them because I worked there with Jesse Eisenberg in 2013 in The Revisionist. Mm. And Rattlestick is such an extraordinary company producing new playwrights all the time. And that's both exactly what a company should be doing, but it's very hard for new playwrights to get performed unless there are people like Rattlestick.
And then you're performing at the Cherry Lane Theater at 38 Commerce Street. It's, I've learned, the oldest continuously running off-Broadway theater in New York.
Yeah, well, it began way, way back in the times of Eugene O'Neill.
So you had read the novel, I assume, before you did that first reading.
I don't think I had managed to read all of it because Michelle, of course, sent me a copy. And I read the passages she'd selected for me to read. And I read some of the book, but I didn't have time because I'm trying these days to read much slower. I usually just lick it up fast, fast, fast. I'm ashamed to say I'm that kind of reader.
Michelle,
not
so
good.
So to some degree, Michelle, you were thinking almost as a playwright when you picked out those excerpts.
No, well, I did because I could hear. I knew that Vanessa would be able to understand, but it was really Vanessa who reached for different parts of the book that she felt would work the best, and I have agreed totally. I mean, she's done a remarkable job.
Is the music meant to convey the setting of the novel?
I would say no. I am not going back to the 30s and trying to recreate music that was happening during that time.
But you are trying to set a mood.
I'm setting a mood. But the mood comes from the words and from Vanessa and how she interprets those words.
And what will you be doing? Vanessa will be reading for a time and then there'll be a musical interlude and
yes.
Then back to you, Vanessa?
I wouldn't describe it like that, but stop it, Vanessa. You're being pernickety. You're saying it fine.
It's not an interlude. It's a bridge.
Uh-huh. Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm just poor choice of words here. You're the writer.
Okay, you're allowed.
I'm just the talk show host. We'll take a little break and actually listen to some of Jimmy Owen's music, not for this, but from one of your albums. Then we'll come back with Vanessa Redgrave, Michelle Zakheim, and Jimmy Owens. We're talking about a one-night-only performance of Last Train to Paris at the Cherry Lane Theater coming up next Monday. Listening to Jimmy Owens, who will be one of the performers in a one-night-only reading of Last Train to Paris at the Cherry Lane Theater on Monday, March 30th, this upcoming Monday. They will be read by Vanessa Redgrave from Michelle Zackheim's novel. And this music probably was a lot easier to perform because you had a keyboardist, you had a drummer.
Yeah.
Are you at a disadvantage?
In actuality, this group is my Italian group. When I would go to Italy, these were the musicians that I would perform with, and they were all half my age. Mm-hmm. So they put fire under me all the time.
You have to wonder about Roy Haynes, who's now 90, playing with people who are one-third his age in many cases.
Right.
Now, you have done one-person shows before, Vanessa. You starred, of course, in the adaptation of Joan Didion's memoir, The Year of Magical Thinking. Also cast as the only member in plays by Samuel Beckett and Wallace Shawn. What are some of the challenges of doing a one-person show?
Well, there are many. But if I may, the last time I performed from a solo voice and a solo book was Joan Didion's Blue Nights, mm-hmm. her last book. And I asked Jimmy if he would work on this with me. So we walked up the aisle to the far end of St. John the Divine, and we turned around and we bowed to the audience, and Jimmy began. And I don't think, Jimmy, we'd had much more than three or four maximum rehearsals, but
right.
we did click because of Joan's voice and the theme of Joan's Blue Nights, which is an extended elegy and sometimes very humorous too, but it is an extended elegy to her daughter Quintana and her husband John Gregory Dunn. Mm. So we already explored this one voice, and it was always clear to me from the moment I had the luck to hear Jimmy draw breath and expel it through that massive, marvelous instrument. It was quite clear to me that the voice and the notes are just two expressions of the soul, and there are other expressions, dance and so on, but the most intimate and the most ancient, of course, is music.
But in this case, Cherry Lane Theater is a lot more intimate than St. John the Divine. In St. John the Divine, you have all that incredible acoustic stuff going on.
Well, basically, we used St. John Divine acoustically. There wasn't microphones to reproduce a lot of the sound, and that's what I worked with. And that's the same thing I'm going to do at the Cherry Lane Theater.
When you don't have other actors to react to on the stage, do you need to think that what you're doing is a dialogue with the audience?
Oh, the whole point is communicating with the audience. And good communication very much depends on the wavelength you help create with them. And in this case, that Jimmy and I help create with them. And his bassist, he's got a great bass player, Kenny Davis.
Were you working these things out in rehearsal?
We've had two rehearsals, and we're working it out from the standpoint of how we feel.
Yeah.
And to bring that feeling, that group feeling, to the audience.
Maybe we should talk a bit about the book. Michelle Rose, your novel's protagonist, is a reporter who writes under the name R.B. Manon in order to be taken more seriously. Since she's Jewish on her mother's side, her last name doesn't identify her ethnicity. Should a bias-free reporter ideally have no gender or religious identity?
Oh, gosh, she's landed you.
Well, that's not fair.
Well, there are a lot. I've known a lot of women who, when they could come up with a name that still represented them, but that didn't reveal whether they were a woman, they chose to do that. Others very consciously chose the opposite. And I
think well, the Martha same is Gellhorn, true. For instance, who was a reporter at that time, kept her own name. I just wanted her to be she needed to be an observer and not a participator because she was naturally a participator. So she had to draw a line, and that's how she drew the line.
And she is a witness to some of the most awful experiences mm-hmm. of the time, including Kristallnacht.
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't more afraid for herself, even though she was Jewish, because she was an American?
She was a very she was a woman who was very onto herself. And she knew, you know, she knew where she wanted to go, and she knew what she wanted to do, and she didn't have a good feeling about how she appeared to the world. She couldn't really see herself in the world. She just wasn't. She didn't have that ability like a lot of people do. So as a result, she built this persona, and she felt immune. She felt safe.
Is she finding herself as her Jewish identity anyway as a result of this?
I don't think she ever thinks about it as a Jewish identity. I think she thinks about it as just acknowledging who she is as the truth, but not wearing the sign, not going to synagogue, not participating in that way.
An important subplot is the sensational trial of a handsome German man who kidnapped and murdered Rose's cousin. And isn't that based on a real incident that happened to one
yes,
of your relatives?
Yes, it did. It happened. I found it in a book by Janet Flanner, a series of essays that she wrote under the name Genet for the New Yorker magazine. And there it was, a story about this relative of mine. And I thought it would make a wonderful nonfiction. And so I started to research it. And then it didn't hold me. And so then I wrote it as a man, the character, and I turned it into Europa, who's a wonderful publisher. And I said, here's my book. And they said, fine, you know, here's your money. And then 2 weeks later, I called them. I said, I can't do it. It doesn't work for me. I've got to change it.
So you rewrote the whole thing?
I rewrote it all. I put it into the woman's voice.
You did include some real characters like mm-hmm. Colette and Janet Flanner.
And those are real.
Vanessa, describe the set. Is there an old red leather traveling trunk that matches the one that's described in the novel?
No. Everything is in transmission in waves.
So you don't wear a costume either. You just do this...
No, I'll try and look nicely, not like I tried to look
nicely. That's not what I mean. But you're doing this very much as a reading.
I tried to look nice for you this morning, and I'll try to look nice on Monday night. And believe me, it's more of an effort than you could be wish to say or figure out even.
Rattlestick Playwrights Theater is celebrating its 20th anniversary season this year. Can you tell us about the company in addition to their main stage shows? I understand you pointed out earlier that they try to help emerging playwrights.
They give readings.
Is this money to encourage that? Because it's a benefit.
Well, what else would it benefit?
The company itself. Because the company...
The company, in order to present either readings or performances, has to have money.
This is scheduled for a one-only performance. Might you do it again?
I have a feeling we might.
Jimmy, are you ready?
I've got an idea already. You can invite us, Leonard.
I'd love to have you do it on our show sometime.
That would be wonderful.
Of course.
Okay.
Good.
Well, you're invited right now to do
All
it.
All right.
Okay.
We'll hold you to it. Lovely.
Could you envision this as a movie? The setting,
no.
Paris and Berlin in the 30s, could be very evocative.
No. I do make movies, both as an actress and as a filmmaker. I've got a small film company with Carlo Nero. We do documentaries mainly. We've done some fiction. But no, my big, big desire at the moment is live communication, but not live communication of the Broadway kind, although I respect that very much because the most brilliant work is done there. I mean, you gasp when you see, especially the Broadway musicals. But that's... much as I'd love to sing in a Broadway musical, wicked or whatever. That's not my big ambition. My big ambition is to communicate directly with the eyes of people I see around me, beside me, and in front of me, and to get us on a wavelength of listening and, if I may say so, that much abused word, but treasured word, love, because Jimmy yesterday gave me a fantastic piece. And I brought it with me, but I'm not going to give it back to you, Jimmy. But
no, it's yours.
It's he gave it to me. It's Martin Luther King writing about the 1964 Berlin Jazz Festival and the significance of this festival, both in the long, long struggle, peaceful, nonviolent struggle for civil rights for what were at that time called Negro Americans. The black civil rights movement that Martin Luther King transformed into an everybody's rights movement. And that's why they killed him, because he went a step too far and was universal.
Well, you, of course, Berlin was significant for other reasons. But despite what you said, Vanessa, I understand that you're going to be in a new film called Jim Sheridan's The Secret Scriptures, with Rooney Mara, who people will remember from the girl with
from
the dragon.
From Trash.
The dragon tattoo.
It's a wonderful, it's a wonderful film.
Also,
Stephen Daldry made it. It's one of the best films I've ever
Trash.
Seen. It's called Trash.
You're also going to be in the Gin Game on Broadway with James Earl Jones?
Sorry?
Aren't you going to be on Broadway with James Earl Jones?
No, I rang Jim the other day and said, Jim, I know I'm missing the most extraordinary opportunity because, as you know, I love and admire you in every which way. But I cannot be away from my home in England from August till January 2016. And he was, bless him, he understood what I was saying and he said, I love you, so he'll go on and do it brilliantly with somebody. And
meanwhile, what are you doing other than this? Any gig, upcoming performances here in New York?
No, not in New York. In actuality, on the 11th of June, me and my wife leave to spend time in Europe. We'll usually spend 2 months.
You could visit Vanessa in London.
I probably will. We stay in Paris and the south of France. And I will perform some concerts. I will be a part of the National Endowment for the Arts Jazz Masters
mm. You were named
celebration.
Jazz Master.
Yes, I was named the Jazz Master class of 2012. There are more than 130 Jazz Masters. You mentioned Roy Haynes. He's one of the Jazz Masters. And other than that, I am planning on putting together another album.
And do we have another book coming from you, Michelle?
Struggling, yes. It's coming.
Make the narrator a woman and don't even fight it anymore.
Don't worry. There are three of them this time.
Thank you all so much for being on our show. Michelle Zackheim, who wrote the book that is the source for this one-night-only performance, although we're hoping perhaps we'll have a second performance here on WNYC. It's at the Cherry Lane Theater on Commerce Street, one of the prettiest blocks mm-hmm. in all of New York.
Yeah.
Vanessa Redgrave will be performing the words, and Jimmy Owens will be providing the music, and I will join you all just to introduce the whole thing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being on
Thank
the show.
Thank you for inviting us here.